Canucks Central Tuesday, Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. You listen live on Sportsnet 650 via the Sportsnet app. And you also listen on demand anytime, anywhere. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whichever podcatcher it is that you prefer. We do appreciate it. Subscribe and leave a review. It goes a long way for us. A lot to come today on Canucks Central, and we'll get the pregame show fired up in an hour's time on Sportsnet 650. But, Sat, it's been another day where the Canucks, it's been really strange how things have played out with COVID protocol for this team. You know, Garland goes in just before puck drop the other day in Washington, and now early this morning we find out that Bo Horvat's gone into protocol. It's been essentially one player at a time, and that's almost more difficult than having a slew of players go in all at once.
Yeah, I mean, it just causes so many different problems. So as soon as you start planning for one thing moving forward, it changes the next day, right? So it makes it very difficult for you to have some consistency. The reality is this is something the entire National Hockey League is dealing with, and that is why you saw them move towards what the other leagues have done, that after the All-Star break, NHL teams will not be testing players unless they show symptoms. So asymptomatic players will not be tested. So only testing that will happen is if somebody has symptoms or a team has to cross the border where they have to do the test before the fact that they travel. So once we get to the All-Star break and afterwards, perhaps we see less of these positive tests because of the way they're changing things. And ever since they made those changes in the NFL, they had less positives as well because you're not testing asymptomatic players, right? So Once we get through this stretch here and we get to the All-Star break, maybe things won't be as tough for a lot of teams. But right now, well, the Canucks are faced with a situation where they don't have Connor Garland and they don't have Bo Horvat. And when they come back is pretty much anybody's guess within 5 to 10 days because of all the uncertainty between federal and provincial protocols to cross the border. So it's still very much a guessing game.
Sportsnet 650's Canuck Central is presented by your local Grip Auto and tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. And you know, we've been talking about, you know, how much and how important this road trip is for the Canucks, not just for this season, but how they evaluate this roster. And that, this is just going to make it more difficult now for this team to evaluate and to continue to keep up results under the Bruce Boudreau era, as they have done so well since the early part of December. But now you don't have Garland. You don't have Horvat. You don't know when you will get them back. I mean, this becomes a real issue for this team, not just for this game in Nashville, but Friday against St. Louis, you're not going to have those guys. You won't have them Sunday. And because of the border issue, we saw what happened with Brock Besser and Phil DiGiuseppe, Justin Dowling earlier, Jason Dickinson. You just don't know once they cross the border what that border guard, what that situation may end up being.
Well, and that's been the big issue. So what happened last time around with the Brock Besser situation that caused a lot of frustration and a lot of confusion was the Canucks were under the understanding, and this is something Boudreau himself talked about, that it would be a 5-day quarantine and then he would be allowed to cross the border. But once they got to the border, the players were told, yeah, you got to start doing your 10-day quarantine when you cross the border here. So that border guard decided to follow the federal guidelines and interpreted that situation as such. But different border guards may have different interpretations because there have been situations where players on different teams have been able to cross, you know, after 5 days and they've been okay. So in the midst of all this going on, it's still very much a human-to-human decision that gets made at the border. So it comes down to the border guard and how they interpret that situation. And as long as you have different guidelines federally and provincially, these are the situations that may arise. So we can sit here and say, well, technically, you know, Horvat could be back in 5 days from now. We can travel, come back to Vancouver and be okay. But after what happened with the Canucks last time, there's a chance that you get to the border and it's like, nope, you got to do 10 days when you come back across the border again. So what if you wait the full 10 days and then test negative? Can that be okay to come across? That's kind of one of the situations that has happened. So as we sit here and talk today, the expectation is it's 10 days after testing positive, and on the 11th day, you can cross the border and be okay. That's the make sure you're fine to cross the border aspect, but when you do that, you also miss more time. So what teams going to have to figure out as time goes on here the next few days is, when do we want to bring these players to the border to try to get them across? Because if we have a same situation as Besser again, it restarts the clock and you got to start from step one again. So as much as there are protocols in place and it should make sense, teams, players, individuals traveling, sometimes it comes down to what the border guard says when you show up at the border.
Which can be very frustrating, as we all know. You know, when you're trying to plan this out, and this whole situation is going to be a huge, it's a disadvantage for the Canadian teams compared to their American counterparts. You know, if you're the California teams in the Pacific Division and you're seeing Vancouver, Edmonton, and Calgary have to go through these types of things, you know, it's a little bit easier for you. And when you're not crossing the border, which is most of the time, your players aren't subject to testing now if they are asymptomatic. You might have to go about it differently as a Canadian team because of, you know, these situations potentially popping up right before you cross the border, and then that sets a clock that maybe you lose a player for a little while. I mean, there's just a lot of things you have to think about extra if you are a Canadian team. So you're thinking about this right now. So Bo Horvat goes into protocol today. 10 days from now would be January 28th. So in an ideal world, he's not playing until the Canucks go to Calgary on January 29th. And that would be like a perfect timeline for Bo Horvat 10 days from now.
Yes. So that's the situation, the way it's set up, right? Because right now, the team is looking at the situation with Yaro Halak and with Connor Garland. Mm-hmm. And that game against Winnipeg is perhaps the time they're thinking Halak could come back. And that game on the road against Calgary is the game they're hoping Garland is going to come back, right? And that is the full 10 days. And for Bo, same type of situation. And I know people are kind of... And here's the other tricky thing that happens. It depends on what nationality a player has, right? What happened with Brock Besser and people asking is, because he's an American citizen, he could have just, he went right across the border again, went back to the U.S., didn't have to go through as long a quarantine, and was fine to meet the team on the road. Well, a Canadian player cannot do that,
yeah,
right? So you can't follow those guidelines. European player for Halak also has to follow different guidelines when coming across the border. So it's a complete big cluster, you know what, trying to navigate these situations. And that's why it does seem like right now you have to take that 10-day timeline into consideration, which does put Canadian teams at a disadvantage because American teams don't have to deal with that. So in theory, Horvat could miss more time just by virtue of being a Canadian player than he would if he was an American player.
It's really tough. And tough on the players to have to go through this as well. You know, Bo with a young family. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into this, and it makes it really difficult on those involved. Florida, St. Louis, and Edmonton coming up on that 3-game homestand. To not have Bo Horvat and Connor Garland, I mean, that hurts this team quite a bit. Not to mention, you know, of course, Tuesday night's game here against Nashville, you're not going to have these players. But now, all of a sudden, we spent so much time talking about Pettersson yesterday and what do you do if he keeps playing so well on the wing. Well, guess what? Elias Pettersson, not going to have to worry about it because he's moving back to center tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you have no choice right now, right? I mean, what are you going to do? You have Dowling coming off, and he's been skating, but you can't throw him out and have him play 16, 17 minutes, right? And as good as JT Miller's been, you can't play him 30 minutes a game, right? And Jason Dickinson's not going to play 15, 16 minutes a game, at least not in a top six role. So I'm really curious to see, number one, I do believe we are going to see Elias Pettersson play center again, but how do you use Jason Dickinson down the middle, and how do you use JT Miller? Because Bo Horvat, more than anything, the hole he leaves in your roster is the fact that he was the matchup guy. He had about 60% of his zone starts on a defensive zone. He's very much been the hard matchup guy for Bruce Boudreau, and he's had success doing so far. So now he comes out of the equation. It's not just moving Pettersson to center, it's also determining saying who's going to be the matchup line and how many minutes do you play Miller, how many minutes do you play Pedersen, and are you comfortable enough to play Dickinson down the middle and have him play bigger minutes in a matchup role? So this does create a lot of different questions.
Well, it really highlights the Canucks' lack of center depth through the roster, and you know that you lose Garland and you lose Horvat, and the forward group looks really thin. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams. Hey, take out two top six forwards from the Toronto Maple Leafs. How are they looking? You know, it does change the dynamic of a lot of teams. You still have to find a way to get results. That's just the name of the game in the NHL. And it does put a lot of pressure on Pedersen to continue playing well after Sunday. You know, that's going to be the player we are watching through these next bunch of games. And it really does make it more difficult to analyze this roster, I think, if you are Jim Rutherford. But, you know, one player that has certainly been given more opportunity because of some of these issues here is Nils Höglander. And I know you mentioned on the Sportsnet broadcast the other night, Sat, that had it not been for Garland going into protocol, there was some chatter that Nils Höglander may have been a healthy scratch for that game against the Washington Capitals. And it was interesting to hear Bruce Boudreau get asked about Höglander today and how he's played. Here is Boudreau's response.
Well, I mean, he scored, 13 goals last year and was probably a great story coming out of camp. I just think that he's got some scoring potential, but he needs to learn how to play the game. I mean, he's still a young kid, and quite frankly, and I don't know, someday he might score 40 goals, but if you're going to hover around the 20-goal mark, you better learn to play both ends of the ice. And I think as a guy that played overseas, I mean, he's still learning that game. I mean, there's a lot of things that he could do better, but I mean, his natural talent is definitely there.
So that's Bruce Boudreau, who in a nice way does sort of put Nils Höglander on blast there, Sat.
Yeah, and you know, it's not all that surprising based on what you mentioned. We had kind of heard that Nils Höglander, behind the scenes, he very much was at risk of being a healthy scratch recently, but they couldn't afford to do that because of the protocol situations and players. You know, every single game somebody ends up coming out of the lineup. And I think that's the first time we have seen Bruce Boudreau really criticize a player so far here, right? Like, he's been honest, he's talked about it, but this was the first time he kind of laid the gauntlet down a little bit for Nils Höglander. And, you know, it's interesting because Hoaglander's ice time has gone down under Boudreau compared to what it was like under Travis Green. But one of the things that we, you know, remarked on this season and talked about was even Travis wasn't trusting Höglander more this year, right? He was kind of not getting more of an opportunity, and you could kind of see him get pushed down the lineup here and there at times. And the defensive side of the game is something they talked about. Here's a second coach who's saying similar things, but even more forcefully right now. And this is the time for Nils Höglander to really start figuring things out. And my question here is, how much of his issues as far as not being the player they wanted to be defensively is from him just not having figured it out yet? Or does it come down to certain limitations in his game? Because how many times, Dan, have we seen players who are skilled, who skate well, who do just about everything right? And you see it, you see the skill set, you see the tools, you see the effort. You're like, man, this guy's a player. He's going to be a player for a long time, and we have a lot of confidence in him and that he should be that guy. But he doesn't get elevated. He doesn't kind of figure out the defensive side of the game or earn that trust from coaches. You talk about higher-end guys, that's happened to, and you see guys on the bubble. Like, even, I'm not making this into a Jake Virtanen conversation, but Virtanen had all the tools. But he just wasn't able to put it together and really earn that trust with the head coach. And that's where Höglander is trying to avoid falling into. It's only year two for him. There's a lot of time for him to figure things out. He has hockey sense. But even going back to Sweden, his coach there, if you remember, guys, said, yeah, he's good offensively, but defensively he's got to get better, especially if he wants to play in the National Hockey League. And you're fine giving him a chance and letting him flourish offensively, but eventually you got to figure that part of your game out. We're now into year two, second head coach. And this, I think, stretch coming up for the rest of the season is going to really tell us a lot about Nils Höglander and how much growth he has within him to be better defensively, or how much of that is actually just limited based on his hockey sense.
It's I find it so interesting with Höglander because I think back to this preseason and watching a couple of games and seeing Höglander play with a ton more burst and really being like, this could be a breakout season for Nils Höglander. And you started to see it right out of the gate. You know, his work rate is something that I think coaches absolutely love to see in a player, but work rate isn't everything. It can do a lot of good things for you, but you know, one thing you learn about or see in some of the great players in the game is they have a great sense of when to turn on and when they don't necessarily need to be going 120% or whatever cliche it is that you want to use. And there are times where I feel like it's that work rate that, even though it does win Höglander his fair share of puck battles, his fair share of pucks in the offensive zone, getting hard on the forecheck, these types of things that you like to see, there are other times when he can overcommit and it causes him to lose positioning and end up in trouble. And I think it's that part, you know, it's one of the things that he has to really learn how to hone in order to maximize his potential, because otherwise he ends up being a middle six guy that, you know, will have some really good nights for you and have some poor nights for you as well.
Well, and that's kind of the situation here, right? And especially when you look at guys that have a lot of effort, and we see a guy that skates really hard, right, and works really hard, it's so easy to look at him and say, man, this guy's got it. He's working hard. He's doing everything. He should be playing a lot more. And what this kind of reminds me of, and I've used this example in the past, but it reminds me of Matt Cook a little bit earlier in his career. And listen, Matt Cook, always effort, always hitting guys, but he was so ultra-aggressive, chasing hits, chasing guys, and taking these weird angles, he put himself out of position half the time, right? And his, you know, crowd will go nuts because he blows a guy up, but then there's an odd man rush going the other way. Or he takes the body, and next thing you know, there's a three-on-two going. Or the lane opens up because he got overzealous trying to throw the body. Now, that's just an example of a guy who's physical, and he's a big-time fan favorite, but sometimes coaches would go nuts, especially early on in Vancouver, because he put himself out of position a lot. Now, that drove Alain Vigneault crazy, and, along with the fact that he'd start fires and then Olin would have to fight for him. And that's the final straw that broke the camel's back with Matt Cook in Vancouver under Vigneault and Dave Nonis. But regardless, the point was he had to figure out when not to be overzealous. And it's great to be aggressive. It's great to go after guys, but you can't take a bad angle. And just because you get on the forecheck, but you're there late, or you're not doing anything for it, then it causes too much friction going back the other way. Because if you get out of position because you're chasing the play, that puts more pressure on the rest of the guys back in transition, also defending in their own zone. And when one guy kind of puts himself out of position and then throws everything out of whack, it causes a big issue for the team system play. That's why coaches get so frustrated when a guy's not doing the things he's supposed to do, or at least not paying attention to the details. And that's why coaches talk about details, because it's as simple as the type of angles you take and when you press and when you don't press. And when you're constantly pushing forward, as good as it looks to fans and as much as we look at it and say, man, this guy's got the effort level, oftentimes, especially recently, Höglander's put himself out of position, and that's what's causing a lot of these issues here defensively for the team. And that's why the coach is getting frustrated.
The important discussion point here, though, Sat, is this isn't about, you know, whether or not Nils Höglander is an NHL forward. He quite clearly is. And even if there are some flaws in his game here, like, the results to this point in his career have been pretty good. You know, it's not like he's under siege. Looking at the numbers, you know, he was having a pretty strong season under Travis Green. The ice time was pretty similar in the overall at 5-on-5, about 12 and a half minutes a night, pretty much before and after the coaching change. But his possession numbers were much better under Travis Green. He was second on the team. On the ice for 10 goals for and just 5 against. But it's kind of flipped a little bit under Boudreau, and he's on the ice for 4 goals, for and 8 goals against. He's below 50% in expected goals. We've seen his Corsi numbers drop below 50% now and be one of the lower numbers on the team. So it's almost as if the aggressive playing style that Boudreau wants to play hasn't really fit with Höglander, when maybe, you know, he was tasked as being the one guy who is aggressive on his line in the forecheck. Now, you know, there's a little bit more, so there's a little bit more nuance potentially in how he has to go about doing his job. And I think that's maybe what the learning curve he's going through right now.
Yeah, and I mean, early on, when you're finding ways to have success, you want to let a guy flourish at what he does well, and that is trying to create offensively, being aggressive, and do those sort of things. And you kind of hope that you give a guy some leash, let him do that, and he kind of figures everything else out. But when you see that progression not continue, and you see kind of dip a little bit, that's when it kind of shows that, okay, we've been showing trust, we've been trying to do all these things, but now you're not getting that kind of response. And I do believe Höglander has all the abilities to be a far better player than he is, but I do also believe that until he figures out exactly what he is in the National Hockey League, it's going to be tough for a coach to really trust him in a top six role, or trust him more in a shutdown or in a checking role. Because so far, he's been tried in a couple different situations. He even played with Horvat in a checking role, and I thought he did pretty well early on, but then that kind of started waning a little bit. So he has the ability to do so, but even though he's an offensive player, he still has to forge an identity in the National Hockey League. Like, what are you really? Because if you're going to be an all-out offensive guy, you got to score more, and that bottom line has to increase. And that's what Boudreau was getting at. It's like, hey, I'll live with you not being great defensively and having some issues if you're scoring close to 40 goals, or let's say even 30 he'd be happy with. But if you're a guy that, you know, is in the 20 goal range but you're not good defensively, well, 20 goals, yes, it's a good number. You want a guy to score 20 goals, but 20 goal scorers don't score in at least 60 games, right? So you're talking about only a quarter of the games at best, if they don't have multi-goal games, that they're getting you a goal. So there's a lot of, what else are you doing for me to make you a valuable player, a guy that should get that ice time that allows you to get 20 goals unless you do everything else? So there's kind of the crossroads that Nils Höglander finds himself in. Can he really forge an identity? And if he wants to be an offensive player, you got to produce more. And I think what Boudreau got at more than anything is, it's kind of time to piss or get off the pot. Like, choose what you want to be. And if you want to be an offensive guy, then I'm going to judge you by the bottom line, and the bottom line hasn't been good enough yet.
Yeah, and it's maybe one of the first moments that we're seeing some tough love out of Bruce Boudreau. And I do feel like, you know, this is the conversation of, you know, how do we get you towards being a top six forward? How are you going to find that player in yourself, and how do we get you there? And that's what we need to see, you know, from Nils Höglander over the next little while. The example I always think of is, you know, this, the evolution of baseball, where, you know, a guy could hit 20 home runs or more, and you'd see teams cut him loose. Whereas, like, you know, in the past, we'd always be like, oh, that guy, he's a 20-homer guy. Like, you want that guy on your team, right? It was just like an automatic thought that we always had. But if it's 20 home runs and you're getting on base at a 280 clip or something like that, below 300, you're not really that valuable of an offensive player. Well, what else are you giving me that is making you a valuable player for this roster? And I think we have to think about that in NHL terms too, in that, you know, 20 goals is nice if I can have a player that adds that to my team and has that sort of 20 goal potential year in and year out, but that player also has to do more than just that to really add to my roster. And I think that's the next step in Nils Höglander's evolution. And I think if he learns that, you'd really start to see more of his offensive potential come out as well. Sat's on mute again. Unbelievable. Knew it would happen eventually.
Yes, it's true. It happens once, even a 1-hour show, it'll still happen. But without question, but here's the thing, though. You're right about Höglander. I mean, maybe Hoaglander's limitations are like my limitations with the mute button. Some things you can't overcome, and maybe that's it. But no, but people mentioning to the text inbox, and this is something to keep in mind, he's a young player still, right? And it's okay for a coach to have some tough love. But that's the thing. right? Like, a coach gives it a little tough love because he's not getting through to the guy. So this is what you have to figure out. And if you get through it, well, that answers a lot of questions here. But as far as value and what a player brings in terms of production or not, this has been my big criticism of Bo Horvat and something that he's improved on. Hey, if Bo is going to be a cornerstone player for you, he's got to figure out what he is, right? If he's going to be used as a two-way checking guy, you got to win your matchups. You can't be below water in your matchups and then score, you know, 50-some points and then be considered a top-end, high-end two-way player. It's like, you're not. You're either an offensive guy or you're a two-way guy. Well, even though Bo, who now had 3 points the last two games, that production's coming up a bit, getting closer to over 50 points, he's on pace for 25 goals, that's not, you know, eye-popping totals, and you want to see him score a bit more, of course, like we talked about earlier last week and everything. But if he's winning his matchup, right, and if he's playing hard minutes, which he has been, and he's not getting caved in because he hasn't been. Now, whether that's Pearson, whoever he's been with, regardless, for 4 years now, Horvat's been used in a shutdown role. He's already been used to match up and play tough minutes, and he hasn't excelled. He has been below water every year except this year. This year, he is winning his matchups consistently. So I can live with that if a guy's winning his matchup playing center, scoring 25 goals, and is on 50-55 point pace. Yeah, you want more, but at least in the games you're not scoring, you're winning your matchup. And that's what you got to have here, because it all comes down to how many games can you make an impact for me. And it can't just be the 15 to 20 games you score goals in.
It's Canuck Central, Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. A lot of good thoughts coming in on the text message inbox from the live listeners here on the show. We'll get to some of those. And also, Jack Rathbone, is he in line for a promotion soon? Sooner rather than later, maybe even as early as when the Canucks return home on Friday. And what does that Canucks prospect pool really look like? And how does it shape the way Jim Rutherford thinks he wants to take this team forward? That's next. It's Canucks Central. Welcome back to Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Shout out to Willie O'Ree finally going out and up into the rafters at the Bruins Arena. Long time coming for Willie O'Ree, and all the tributes you see coming out for Willie O'Ree are fantastic and well-earned for what he's meant to the game of hockey through his career and post-career as well. So big shouts to Willie O'Ree, Sat.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always it's always great seeing a legend be taken care of and a trailblazer and somebody who has meant a lot and opened a lot of doors. I know he didn't have the longest career in the National Hockey League, but what he did really opened so many different doors. And he had to go through a lot for him to get to that point. When you consider the degree of difficulty he had to face and perhaps not getting the chances he probably would have gotten if he wasn't a black hockey player at the time. So all the respect in the world for Willie O'Ree, and nice to see the Boston Bruins do the right thing here.
His number 22 going up in the rafters. Congratulations, Mr. O'Ree. So we've been talking about Nils Höglander, and our live listeners get to interact with us on Sports at 650. 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. If you listen via podcast or listening later in the day, you can always send us a mailbag question. We answer them every Friday. Use the capital MF to send in your question for the Dunbar Lumber text line. That way we can mark it and save it for Friday's edition of Canuck Central. Also, the Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. You can send in those questions as well at Dan Riccio _ and at Satyar Shah on the DM on Twitter. So a lot of reaction coming in, Sat, on Nils Höglander.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one here, Jeff in Mission, says, is Höglander going to be Mason Raymond 2.0? Höglander, Pullman, and a third for McDavid. That's Jeff from Mission. So that's kind of having fun with the old rumors of, was it Raymond Ballard and a third or a second?
Yeah.
So
I thought it was a second, to be honest. Like, they might have to upgrade it to a second for McDavid, to be honest with you.
Perhaps. Well, a second. Or at least an extra fifth alongside a third. Just up it slightly. This one, Nelson and Colonna. Hoglander is a new Kyle Wellwood. So much skill, no finish. And, you know, the one thing I will say here about Hoglander is you also got to be careful. He's young, and it's not the same conversation as Pettersson, because Pettersson won the Calder, and he had some really elite-level seasons already. Hoglander hasn't quite done that, but he's a young player, right? And, you know, you always assume that players take this, you know, take a year-by-year ascension and they get better and better. But sometimes you take a step back and you take another step forward or two steps forward the next season. It's part of the progression for young players, and you kind of see that across the league all the time. So I'd be careful to say, you know, Hoglander is never going to figure it out or he's a new Kyle Wellwood or whatever. But again, he's a young player trying to find what his true identity in the National Hockey League is, and that's what I think Bruce Boudreau was getting at more than anything.
It's, again, this isn't like an indictment of Nils Hoglander in that, you know, he's a poor hockey player or anything like this. I think this is about progression in the player and where you want to see him get to, because you see all of these things. And, like, this is already a pretty good hockey player, but he's so young. How do you get to that next level? And this is, you know, the part of the game that's going to be what determines that. It's, you know, getting better at both sides of the ice. Your off-the-puck moments and how much they mean to your overall success. Because even as it is, you know, Hoglander's been pretty much an even player for his career when you look at scoring chance differentials and all of these different types of things, Sat. You know, he generates as many shots as almost anybody on the roster at 5-on-5. He's over 9 shots per 60. There's only so many players on the roster that generate that much. Those offensive capabilities are there, but that's one side of the ice, you know? And so for him to take that next progression, it's about the other side of the ice. So, like, as much as we are criticizing Nils Hoglander, you can't just leave out the idea that, you know, he has been a pretty good player so far to this point of his career. And let's also remember, like, none of us expected him to be on this roster last year and then continue. And then he ends up being close to a 40-point pace. You know, like, he's done a lot, but he's also raised expectations, and rightfully so, because he has played well. So now you're trying to get him to that next level. And that's the big stipulation here for Nils Hoglander.
Well, and you know, and part of it too is kind of a microcosm of what this Canucks team is as a whole, right? It's they have talent, but they have some young guys who are taking a bit of a step back or haven't quite hit their peak yet, and you're trying to figure out how to get more out of him, but also be successful still, right? And not to say that Boudreau is realizing the same things that Travis did. That's not true, right? Because you're seeing the way he's kind of moving forward with the team and all that sort of stuff. But one of the things he did mention today, too, Boudreau did, was, hey, we don't have the most skill in the world, right? He'll still mention that, hey, we're still kind of lacking a higher end, but we work really hard and we got to make sure that we keep playing as hard as we are. So that kind of goes back to the rest of the team. If you're not able to generate more offense, you got to find ways to be successful in other ways, or at the very least not lose in other ways. And what have we seen here, especially through this road trip? The Canucks have had a very, very thin margin for error, right? And special teams has been the differentiating factor. At evens, mm-hmm. They've been fine, especially even against Florida and Tampa. They played okay in those games, right? Or they even outchanced those teams on the whole through those two games. But you weren't able to generate. Then your special teams let you down. So you go through your roster and you're like, okay, we have guys that can score, but they're not quite scoring. But what else are they giving up? Because we're not excelling on the PK. The power play is still underachieving relative to the talent that we have or assume that we have on this team, but we're not getting better on the PK. And if we're not going to score more, that means we also can't give up more on evens. We've got to find a way to be good defensively. And that's not to say that Boudreau is going to revert to being more passive and not be aggressive as a team. His identity with this roster is to be aggressive, forecheck, and create offense in that way. But you also got to be careful too that you don't make a lot of bad mistakes, because this team is not good enough to play this style and repeatedly be out of position as well. So as much as we talk about Hoglander, he's a microcosm of where the Canucks find themselves right now as they try to improve their overall game to stay in this playoff race.
The other part of this that I think is really interesting to me, of course, with the new management and you know, as we've talked about, as you heard on the podcast yesterday with us and Frank Saravalli, like the ongoing assessment of the roster, you know, like they're trying to decide which guys we want to keep and which guys, you know, we think we can move on from, right? And maybe try to help this team in a different way. So not that they're, you know, actively trying to trade Nils Höglander, but I think, you know, that assessment and that pressure point is being felt as they continue to assess all the what they have with this team.
And I'm still somewhat skeptical that, you know, you know, Rutherford's watching all this and kind of going, yeah, you know, I don't quite know what this team is. I got to figure it out. And I'm still trying to find out what they – I think to a large degree, he's got his mind made up to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. And part of it, too, is waiting to get your GM in place and then kind of move forward. But I don't think they're waiting on, too, this road trip to end and the month to end for them to really get a sense of what this team's all about and also to get a GM in that he gets his eyes set on everything and then he figures it out. I think at this point, Rutherford already has a pretty good idea of what this team needs and what they have to do to move forward in doing so. The question here is, how much are you actually in this race? Because you don't want to also sabotage your chances of being a playoff team. That's not to say that they won't make a move if there's a move that presents themselves, even if it means, hey, big picture, you take a slight step back, but it's going to really set you up for next season and the year afterwards. I do believe they'll explore all that. But I think when I'm looking at this now, I'm unconvinced that Rutherford's sitting here every game going, all right, tonight I'm going to know exactly what I have with this team. I don't think so.
It's one of the things that, you know, I keep hearing about Rutherford is he's pretty quick to understand and devise his plan. So I think you're probably right. You know, he has a good idea of what he wants to do with this team it moving forward. But the ongoing player evaluations and what they can get out of each player, you know, that's an ongoing thing. And for a lot of these young players, Nils Höglander especially, you want to see what their ceiling might be and where they could take their game to the next level. Now, one player that is obviously on a bit of a heater right now, maybe scored the nicest goal of the Canucks season not so long ago, it's Tyler Mott, Sat. And you know, we've talked about Mott and that he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, so you have a bigger pressure point on him than maybe anybody else on this roster when it gets to the trade deadline. But you know, with all of the absences that the Canucks are going through, there's Tyler Mott once again being the player to elevate his game and really earn the love of the coach in a quick period of time.
Well, his ice time, Dan, has increased 30% in recent games, right? He was playing about 10 minutes a game. He's over 13 now in recent games under Boudreaux. So you are starting to see that trust come into Mott. Because that's one of the things we kind of talked about early on in Boudreaux's tenure. It's like, hey, Travis Green was playing Mott a lot, like 15 minutes a game, whereas Boudreaux is really using him as a fourth liner. So what does that mean long term? You know, how do you view him? Because you're sure not going to sign a guy to a long-term contract or to any type of extension if he's going to play 10 minutes a game for you, right? So now that you're starting to see the coach play him more and show more faith in him and you're starting to see him get hot, like I'm really kind of watching Mott as being the guy who's going to get elevated the most, especially with Horvat and Garland now. We're sitting here and talking about Höglander. I don't know. I think Tyler Mott's going to get a big opportunity here, even against the Nashville Predators. And he'll probably be used, I believe, alongside whoever in that matchup role. And he's probably going to have his ice time go up a little bit. He's good on the forecheck, right? He's got a lot of speed, good on the PK. And the coach is playing him more and more every single game, especially down the stretch here. So if we're looking at who's going to benefit the most, or at least get the benefit of doubt the most in the absence of Horvat and Garland, it might actually be Tyler Mott when we're talking about those guys not named Pettersson and Besser and so on.
It's hard to not really love Mott as a player and what he brings to this roster. And you can tell, you know, coaches absolutely love it and how he's been able to win over not just Travis Green, but now, you know, after a slow start under Boudreaux, he's really winning this coach over. but also Highmore. You know, they've kind of become a little bit of a dynamic duo for the Canucks over the course of this road trip as a partnership, like just two guys who are going to make life uneasy for their opponents. And the Canucks have kind of needed that in the bottom of their lineup set.
Well, they have, but also just the overall speed that he has, right? It's one thing to make life harder on somebody, but it's also something to up your overall team speed. And I know Matt Highmore is an imperfect player. I know Bick right now is just loving all the Highmore hype that's building up and him playing better because, you know, it's Bick's son. Bick loves Matthew Highmore. But he is being a bit more productive recently as well, right? We're like, hey, he creates a lot. There's always good things happening, but you got to have something on your bottom line, right? But the speed those two guys both have has been a real find for this team, especially on this road trip. And yeah, at times they have had trouble against tougher opponents. And hey, it's Tyler Mott and Matthew Highmore. But if you split those guys up, can you still get a bit of a push? And how does that kind of build the rest of your line? I know, because I know we talked to Donnie Taylor about Matthew Highmore, and we asked him, hey, do they have something in him? If he keeps playing the way he has in recent games, he might be a cheap internal option for you, even if you can't find a way to keep Tyler Mott. I know Rick Dollywall today kind of mentioned that, you know, Mott may be wanting something in the Jason Dickinson range, and that's what we talked about yesterday, right? We said, hey, you know, Tyler Mott, it's going to be hard for you to look at his contract and say he should get less than Jason Dickinson, who's also a winger and also producing less than he is, right? So that's what it kind of comes down to. If you want to keep Tyler Mott, can you afford to keep Mott and Jason Dickinson? Can you afford to pay Mott and Dickinson close to $5 million combined to not score enough for you, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of the dilemma the Canucks find themselves in if you're looking at a Mott extension in any sort of way, right? I don't think you can do so with Dickinson still on the books, because can you earmark that much money to two guys who are essentially defensive wingers in many ways?
I like the Dickinson contract when it was signed. I like the trade when they made it, but it just hasn't worked out. And like, he's been fine defensively, but yeah, his stick has been where a lot of offense has gone to die so far this season. He's got to find that part of his game even just a little bit more to really start bringing value at all close to that contract. Even though it's not so expensive, you still need to give the Canucks a little bit of offense with what he's getting. And for Tyler Mott, I mean, I get this question all the time. I'm sure we'll maybe have a look at it on Mailbag Friday again. And we've talked about it already on the show, Sat. But, you know, if you were looking to deal Mott at the deadline, what is coming back the other way? I think some people speculate a late first-round pick. I think that's a lot for a rental player, but it's not much less than that, I'll tell you that, I don't think.
No, now, I'm not sure you're actually getting a first. Now, hey, if you do, hey, that's a fantastic move by the organization if they move him and get a first-round pick back in return. Because the comparables are Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow. But those guys came with more than just one run at it, right? I mean, those guys came in and you had them for a couple of runs. And to have him be a pure rental despite the contract being, you know, only 1.1, I don't see you getting a first-round pick. If you do, fantastic. I just think realistically you're talking about a second and perhaps something else alongside of it, right? Not a B or, you know, B-plus prospect, but a second and perhaps, you know, a C prospect or something else. Like, I do think that's kind of available for you for Tyler Mott. Like, you're getting a second round pick plus something else. I'm not sure you're actually getting a first.
I do think you can get something there, obviously. And depending on where this team is, it might make the most sense to go down that road, even though Tyler Mott has brought more than anybody really expected coming out of the Thomas Vanek trade. Quick thought, Sat, on Jack Rathbone and whether or not he'll be a Vancouver Canuck potentially by Friday.
I certainly hope he gets the opportunity here. And if it's not by Friday, I see him being with his team very soon, because it kind of goes back to looking at how this team is playing. Like right now, I know Burrows plays tough and Brad Hunt has had some decent moments here and there, but neither guy is really holding down a spot on this blue line. And if you're playing a guy who's a left-handed defenseman on his right side, like you are with Kyle Burrows, for instance, or, you know, whoever you're kind of playing that are two righties on the same pair, that's not putting a guy in the situation to be most successful. And if you're playing guys 12, 13 minutes a game anyways, why not bring up Jack Rathbone? The only reason the Canucks didn't send Jack Rathbone down was, hey, wasn't quite getting the ice time, struggled a little bit. They wanted him to go out and play a bit and get some ice time. But now, he's probably your best option on the back end. So the sooner you get him in, the better. And I think this organization is itching to get a look at him in the National Hockey League under Jim Rutherford and Bruce Boudreau.
You know, you've had an interesting cast of characters playing defense for the Canucks over the last little while with some of the injuries and obviously the COVID protocol. But Jack Rathbone offers a ceiling that the Canucks just haven't had back there. And we all thought it would show right at the beginning of this season. It hasn't, but that doesn't mean the player can't be looked at again. So Rathbone could be one of the big parts of this Canucks team moving forward for Jim Rutherford and company into next season. Sat, we'll be seeing you on the broadcast tonight with the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to the game. See if the Canucks can get another W and set us up for a fun conversation for Friday's game against the Florida Panthers at home.
Back at Rogers Arena. That'll do it for Canucks Central today. Back tomorrow with a full program. Up next, it's the pregame show on Sportsnet 650.